All year round, Frontier Home Products and Design has what you need to make your home comfortable and beautiful. Relax on a new timber tech deck designed by Frontier's experts. A new fireplace from Frontier Home Products Fireplace Gallery adds warmth and serenity to any home. Beauty and versatility at Frontier Home Products and Design Center, 4213 Peachtree, 5th next to the Bayfront Highway.
Frontier Home Products and Design Center. Discover a new frontier.
PA contractor number PA039007.
Hi, I'm Jody Crumpy, director of the Erie City Mission Thrift Stores and Donation Center. When you shop at one of our two thrift stores or drop off items at our donation center, you are providing a meal. You are housing a man in our shelter, helping men and women overcome addiction, and giving our inner city youth an opportunity to learn. I want to thank you for making a difference. This is our city, our mission. God bless you.
Welcome to TalkErie.com's Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast. Every day, we tackle the biggest issues that the Erie PA region faces. Stay informed and involved as we advance the narrative of Erie. Now, here's Joel Natale.
We want to say hello to Ben Spagan. He is the vice president with the Jefferson Educational Society. Hey, Ben, good to see you, sir. Appreciate it.
Hey, Joel, great to see you. And this is, what, twice in a little over 24 hours?
I
saw you yesterday at the media conference.
Yes.
I love this. It's so great to see you. So great to be in the studio. Hello to all your listeners tuning in on the radio, watching and listening on Facebook. Appreciate people tuning in. Great show, Joel. Honor to be here.
Appreciate it. Hey, before we get into the winter schedule, let's talk a little bit about your big announcement yesterday, because I think it is another example of the Jefferson being present and providing value to the greater community conversation and solutions for a huge problem that we have, which is childcare.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Joel. And yes, so yesterday, it was a great honor to be part of a joint media conference with the Erie Community Foundation, the JES. We announced the Early Childcare Investment Policy Initiative. The idea of this, which we are grateful for the Community Foundation's funding and support of, is to tackle a wicked problem, not just in Erie, Pennsylvania. We'll look at it through an Erie lens, but it's a problem nationwide, Joel, and it's childcare. Mm-hmm. And childcare is really an economic development issue, because what we see is, one, the cost of childcare is so high. Whether you're using home-based childcare or you're using center-based childcare, it is costly. Also, wait lists are deep. You know, I'm talking to friends that they're trying to get kids on. By the time that they get a kid on a waiting list and then get approved, the kids are already in preschool. Like,
wow.
That's how old they are when this happens. So we've been so fortunate to work with various experts along the way. Dating back to 2021, we released a report written by Court Gold, a local-based consultant here in Erie, and he is the lead facilitator of this initiative. He's put together a team of six policy experts, some with local focus, some with regional focus, some with statewide focus, and we're really going to do a deep dive on what can Erie do to address this. We've talked about before, Joel, we hear food deserts when we don't have access to food. In the JES's space, we've talked about civic deserts, where we don't have access to civic dialogue, civic engagement, civic kind of programming, you know, what we do at the think tank, but also childcare deserts. That's the other one. You know, there's not just one desert. There's so many. And some folks here in Erie live in a childcare desert. They don't have access. And there's a disproportionate number of childcare centers that are actually located in the city, which is great for the city, right? But still not enough even in the city. But compared to the rest of the county, access to childcare precipitously drops.
Wow.
And so we are taking 6 months to explore this issue with these team of experts. They're going to be producing bi-weekly posts and updates and dispatches along the way. They're going to have public programs throughout the 6 months to engage the community. We want to hear from folks. What experiences have you had? What challenges do you have? What solutions might you know of that we want to take a look into? Of course, we'll look at other metros to benchmark what other cities are doing, what could be adaptable and scalable to Erie, and ultimately come up with a report in 6 months. And that's the end of phase one. And we're not going to solve this in six months, right, Joel? This is a wicked problem. We need all hands on this. And all hands actually means tonight we're graduating our Civic Leadership Academy. Their 7-month-long topic was childcare. So this is a terrific foundation for the new initiative. initiative to be able to build upon, to expand. And we have Ramey Fellows. Those are folks that are doing a more intensive look at leadership theory and individualized research projects through the Civic Leadership Academy. They're working on childcare too. So we're trying to do as much as we can around a problem that we know is plaguing Erie right now. We think Erie can actually be a model for the nation if we get this right, come up with practical solutions, and find ways to address this.
I was talking to Court yesterday as part of our coverage, and it just seems to me that there's this domino effect, and a lot of it has to do with what you can make as a childcare worker, because there's kind of built-in barriers there, because the numbers don't pencil out. If let's say if you want to, okay, we'll pay them $25 an hour. Okay, how do you get that to go? And who's going to pay the $800 a week to pay for the $25? It's hard. It's a very hard deal.
It is, and it's more complex and multi-layered than I think people realize. And then how interconnected this is. And that's part of it is that, one, you know, these are positions that are often undervalued and underpaid.
Right.
So it leads to high turnover rate in this sector. You know, you've got a revolving door of employees. Retention is tough. So then you've got people asking the question of, like, who's actually taking care of my child?
Yeah.
But then the actual cost of childcare for parents. And so you've got parents facing down the dilemma of, do we both work so that one of us can use half of, if not two-thirds of, if not almost all of our one salary to put our child through daycare so that we can work? Or does one of us stay home? And if we exit the workforce, for how long? And then do we re-enter the workforce? So you're looking at workforce loss. You're looking at an impact on economic development in a way that is really important to growing economies. If you're taking people out of the workforce who can't afford to work because they've got to stay home. Because why? They decide to have a family. Come on. How tough is that? Like, we decide to have a family, and now we have to not participate in the workforce, or we have to work to make sure that our child's taken care of. So many things that we need to look at with this issue. So we're really excited for what's to come with our policy experts, including they're going to have their first public presentation on Friday, February 16th. That's going to be at the JES, so up on 32nd and State. That's a free event. It's a lunch program. So we've been doing these community conversations, Joel. They're terrific. People love them. They're coming in lunch. If you want to bring your own lunch, you can. You can brown bag it. You want to order a lunch from us, you can order a lunch from us for $5. But the event's free. We've been bringing in community leaders and civic stakeholders to talk about the work they're doing in real time, to give real time updates. This is going to be right as we're getting in the thick of things and getting started. So if this is something important to you, if you want to have a hand in addressing the childcare crisis in Erie, I really invite you to register for this program and show up Friday, February 16th, noon at the JES.
Boy, you know, it just brings out this whole thing. You can't get AI to run your child care. You can't get AI to do personal care for elderly or intellectually disabled people. You can't get AI to run your hospital floor. And that's where our biggest workforce issues are right here in Erie, PA.
They absolutely are. It's the human touch. It's the human issue. It's the jobs that won't be replaced by robotics, won't be replaced by the machines, because humans are doing them because we expect a human interaction. And we've got to care for the people that are doing that work. We've got to care for the caregivers, essentially. And one of the other points to think about, too, Joel, is the stress on... So I think often when we talk about workers, we think, oh, the 9-to-5, right? Not everybody works 9-to-5, Joel. There are people that are working second shift or third shift. And what made me think of that when you were talking about it is thinking about those who are working in the field of intellectual and developmental disabilities that may have a second shift, those mm-hmm. that are working at the hospital that might have a second shift. And if they've got a kid that needs to get childcare, how many centers are open around the clock? There was a reason that we really wanted to host yesterday's announcement at ABC 24 up on 13th and State, because that's one of the few providers that's open 24/7. So if you've got a second shift job, you've got a third shift job, you can go to a center like that. Those are not as common as you might think they are. And we know a lot of folks that are working not just the 9-to-5. Heck, Joel, right after this show, I'm going back to work. I got to go back up to the JAS for the graduation. I'm
Absolutely.
There for this evening. I'm working an evening tonight.
It's so true. All right. We've got a new season ahead of us. The Jefferson a 2024 winter schedule. There's lectures, discussions, invited distinguished speakers, and of course the satellite programming. Do you have a theme here? Is there something that kind of overarches that kind of gets under your skin and says, hey, this is really important stuff?
Sure. So I always love answering, do we have a theme? And I say, this is like the most Seinfeld answer I can give. The theme is there is no theme. But, you know, it really is. I really, when putting the programming together, and I get a chance to do this schedule, when putting the programming together, I try to look for something that's going to excite someone about something and everyone about something, mm-hmm. so that we can bring people in around topics that matter at large. And I think that's really Jeffersonian in its approach. You know, it's not Jefferson the president, right? It's Jeffersonian education, that we should care as much about politics as we do about philosophy, as we do about art, as we do about recreation, about things that are happening in our community. We should care about all of that. I would say a theme that exists is the continuation of the community conversations. Angela Beaumont, a terrific colleague that I had the chance to work with for many years, who has shifted into different work, and we're so excited for her next chapter and opportunity. She did such a great job introducing the community conversations as a real anchor in our programming, and so we're glad to bring those back. But really, this is, you know, get everyone excited about something and try to deal with issues of today, but also issues of yesterday, and maybe sometimes together. You know, we're continuing the great work of one of our terrific founders who really helped shape the vision of who we are and what we do, and that's Reverend Charles Brock. And we continued the Brock Institute, and we were so delighted that we were able to pick up on a series that he was actually developing before he passed, and he passed in November of last year. But he was working on this up until the end, the loss of democracy then and now, you know, wow. Because we're talking about how fragile is democracy here in America today. Mm-hmm. And I think, and this is what Charles thinks, I agree with him, it's valuable to look back in history. You know, we're not the first to have democracy. There have been other democracies. There have been other attempts at this. And so we're actually kicking that off with our president, Dr. Ferchi Farhadi, and he's going to talk about the fall of the Roman Republic. What lessons can we look at and learn from history that might better guide our understanding of what's happening when we talk about lowercase d democracy? What does that mean to us today? What does it mean to be, you know, the Republic of America? How do we think about that? How do we talk about that in real time? Well, how do we know our history? Because I'll repeat it for the umpteenth time, because everybody loves this quote. If you don't learn your history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know, I think we want to keep our democracy, right? I do. I think democracy is great. It's the greatest form of government I've ever known. Is it perfect? It's not. But I don't want to trade it in for something else. I think there are important lessons for us to learn out there. So we're going to use that as a vehicle to really explore that important issue.
When is that conversation happening?
So that one is on Wednesday, March 13th. So looking a little bit ahead, but
yeah.
Put that on your calendar. You know, before you know it, it'll be here. It's a little over a month away.
Now, you realize, too, that the Roman Empire is very hip right now.
It is.
I don't understand why. Can you figure that out for me, Ben?
So I will admit this. This is just between you and me. So, Joel, any of your listeners, turn the volume down. Don't listen.
Right.
But, Joel, just between you and me, I was shocked when I found out that, like, the modern American male thinks about the Roman Republic once a day. I don't. So, I mean, I guess I think about it, and, you know, I'm in conversation. I'm thinking about it now, obviously, because
right.
We're talking about Ferchi's program. And I think about this because, you know, Ferchi is a wonderful historian when it comes to Roman history. I mean, he is just absolute. And so I love to hear him talk about it. He might think about it every day, but I don't. But, you know, I love that all of a sudden this became a TikTok thing of how often are you thinking about the Roman Republic every day? Like, I didn't know that, but here we are. So let's have a program about that and welcome people in to talk about the Roman Republic. And what are you thinking about every day? What portion of it? What leaders? What falls? What rises? And, you know, it's a great opportunity to involve people in a conversation I wouldn't have imagined a year ago we're having, but here we are.
I do love the movie Gladiator, so give that.
I'm with you on that.
And I took 2 years of Latin, too. So
I did, too, and it wiped out all my French. So I lost a dead language.
Ben Spagan is with us, Vice President of the Jefferson Educational Society, and we're talking about the winter series here. And, Ben, let's get right to it. Excuse me. You're doing a presentation tomorrow for that community conversation, the lunch deal, From Gray to Green, Exploring and Comparing German U.S. Models of Economic Transition. That sounds really interesting.
I appreciate you saying that. I happen to think it's really interesting. So I had the good fortune, and I was so grateful that you invited me in to talk about it a couple of weeks after I had gotten back. But last year I had the opportunity, I was invited to participate in an international study tour in Germany.
Was that Bavaria, or were you throughout the country?
So we started in Berlin, which I think was really helpful because we got to meet with a lot of government officials in Berlin. And then we moved we also went to Essen, and we went to the Ruhr area. So I got to see Duisburg and a few other places in Western Germany. So it was just a week long. But the purpose of the tour was to bring in folks from various countries. There were 14 of us. I was the U.S. representative, and there were folks there from Brazil, from the U.K., from Turkmenistan. And the idea was to go and look at the German model of economic transition. What they're looking at there is they're looking at changing economies. And so, you know, a stereotype that holds true is Germans are good at planning, right? And so, you know, they know that there has to be a conversion away from fossil fuels. One, they're finite. You know, they're not going to last forever. Two, there's the acknowledgement of the pollutants that are being put out. But instead of trying to just flip a switch and say, okay, tomorrow we're going green, they've put in benchmarks and they've said, by these years, we're going to hit these metrics and we're going to transition the workforce. So it's a top-down approach from the government. And so we're seeing their reaction to changing economies away from economies that might have been more dependent on what we think of as industrial economies into information economies. But still, what are you doing about workers? So, for instance, you know, when we had the opportunity to tour a few shuttered coal mines, and we were talking about the coal industry. One, when they were closing these coal mines, they announced far in advance this was going to happen. So it wasn't an overnight shock to any of the employees. Two, it was, if you are of an age where it's going to be impractical or virtually impossible for you to re-enter a different workforce, let's find a way to have reparations for that. And so we'll pay you out and find a way that, you know, you're being supported and thanked for all of your hard work, with the acknowledgement that you might have had 10 more years to do that job and you're not able to transition to a different economy. Let's find a way to make sure that your family's sustained. Now, if you have the opportunity to transition into a different job, here's retraining. And here's a way to focus on getting you ready for the jobs of tomorrow, today. So it's really interesting to see that approach. Now, of course, that moves then at the speed of government. So, you know, it's a federal approach, you know, carried out by provinces. And so it can be complicated. It can be wrapped in bureaucratic tape. One of the examples I had heard when I was over there was, you know, there was going to be government funding to repair these, to retrofit these furnaces at a glassmaking factory. And of course, they said, great, we're going to do that. We're going to retrofit. And they had to shut them down. Well, they shut them down. They're waiting on the money. Money's not there. What do you do in the meantime? So, you know, obviously it's not a perfect system. What I think is important, at least from my American perspective, you know, having attended that, I think there are lessons there of how we can be more thoughtful in our planning. I think what America gets right and we do really well is we have the entrepreneurial ecosystem, right? We love the story of, you know, person in garage makes product, goes on Shark Tank, becomes millionaire, sells that, then becomes multimillionaire, then sells that, and then that. And so we love the Steve Jobs story, right? Yeah. You know, we love how that begins. We've done better in America in creating stickier entrepreneurial systems. And here in Erie, an example that I was telling Europeans about and others from throughout the globe was our Northwest Innovation Beehive model. You know, we don't have an R1 university. However, we have our universities bound together by this collaborative saying, we'll do something special in terms of the entrepreneurial ecosystem. Let's focus on marketing and let's focus on business plans. Let's focus on this, and we can help grow that so that you don't have to go it alone in your garage. Yeah. You know, so I think that's important. I think we're doing that. But lessons for us is we can plan better to transition economies.
I'm interested in, you mentioned that the bureaucracy was kind of the stumbling block. I would think that politics, you know, as an overarching part of the narrative, would be problematic when we talk about economic transition, you know.
I'm not going to make the statement that it's not there, that there's no there, because I think there is there, and I think from the political standpoint, One of the interesting things to focus on in Germany is the rise of the AfD party. That's the Alternative for Germany party. That's the far-right party in Germany. They've won some local elections. There's some concern about the fringe movement and where it's headed. Enough that, you know, I think Germany as a whole is being mindful of that and very curious. So looking at the elections that Poland just had in terms of tamping back authoritarianism, Germany's chiefly interested in that. However, there is I found this to be counter to what I would have thought, and I think I carry my Americanism with me everywhere I go, of the rugged individual and, you know, we're going to, you know, debate it out and duke it out. There is a unifying sense of being German. And I think that that helps the political will to say that as a country, we're going to do this for the good of the people. And they're so they're a social democracy, right?
Yeah.
So democratic socialists in a sense, you know, that we might think of. But they're the way that their government is designed is to make sure the people are supported and helped. Also, another stark difference between the U.S. and Germany would be we're in a largely two-party system. I know we have independents. I was once a registered independent, and we have some third parties, but largely we are a bipartisan two-party system, six parties in Germany. So you've got a coalition build, right? So they know how to get consensus amongst people. Again, I'm not saying it's perfect. I've got a broad brush here when I'm painting, but it was surprising to me, like it might have been surprising to you, that there was not more political infighting around the response, and also the way that some of these initiatives are structured. So if one region is doing better economically, it can actually shift some of those funds to economically distressed regions to help rise them as well. So we're looking at trying to not have left behind regions. And I think that's important to the German model, is they're trying to be active about not losing a portion of the country, saying, we haven't thought about you, we haven't helped you develop, we haven't worked. And, you know, when I was at the Brandenburg Technical University, I really did see a whole of region approach, you know, where they were thinking about the entire region. And even in Essen, it's a fairly large city, Essen thinks of its successes as the region's successes, and likewise the region's successes as its own, including, like, when I was there, we had the good fortune a few years ago when during the pandemic we did a virtual program with the mayor of Bottrop, Germany, because he had an innovation city model that we thought was really interesting for Erie, Pennsylvania. When I got there and I was like, oh yeah, the innovation city model in Bottrop, they were like, that was such a great success and we're so proud of them, and we were like glad to work with them and prop them up. So there's more of a we are all in this together spirit than we might find here in the United States.
Ben Spagan is with us. He's with the Jefferson Educational Society. It's their 2024 winter schedule. And Ben, we kind of covered like two of the next two dozen events. So let's get a little bit further in. And I wanted to ask you about next Tuesday, Dr.
Gaucher
talking about another devastating war in Gaza. Are we any closer to a solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict? I got a feeling that's going to be a well-attended event.
I got a feeling about that too, Joel. And those listeners that were with us in the top of the hour, I alluded to current events, right? You know, and we have two different programs. One's going to touch on the situation in Gaza. The other one's going to talk close to the two-year anniversary mark of the war in Ukraine. You know, what are happening with those? Because the U.S., look, we are involved in those in terms of we're supporting allies. Funding is tied up on Capitol Hill around this, of how much funding, what do we want to do? There's, you know, clearly political infighting about a pathway forward, but we've got to be real about it. The people are losing their lives daily in both of these places. So what is the world doing about this? What does this mean? Dr. Gaucher, who's a terrific lecturer, he's a scholar in residence at the JES2. He's actually the new chairman of our board.
Wow.
We welcomed him on as our new chair in August. He was a longtime tenured professor at Edinburgh, Penn West Edinburgh now. One geographer of the year in academics one year, really a terrific scholar who is from that area. He was born in Jerusalem, so he knows it well. He's traveled well. I think this is an important part to note, that while this isn't happening in our community or our backyard, it's people. And
oh, yeah.
it that makes it our own backyard. So what is happening Is there a pathway forward? Can we think of, you know, is a two-state solution possible? How can we de-escalate any of the fighting? Has Israel gone too far? Have they not gone far enough? Those are the kind of questions that we want to be able to entertain and learn from somebody who knows that region, can explain better to an audience what's happening, why it's happening, and how we might imagine a pathway out.
It's remarkable that kind of conversation at that high level is coming to Erie. I got to talk about the eclipse. Dr. Darren Evan Williams, from Barron is coming to the Jefferson on Tuesday the 20th.
Right. I mean, it's a very excited for April 8th. That's coming up. Erie is in prime spot for this. This is going to be terrific. But let's, one, I delight in just, this is fun. This is happening. Two, I want to know more about it. You know, I have always just been curious. I remember my dad telling me, I don't remember it actually happening because I think I was too young at that point, but I remember him taking me out and like beginning to point out constellations. I think, you know, he used to tell me like, oh, we saw Halley's Comet and things like that because we were just like, because he thought that was important. Mm-hmm. And we just liked looking up at the night sky. We liked understanding that. I remember there was some eclipse when I was in elementary or middle school where we made the cardboard boxes and we got to understand that.
Was the sky really vivid in West Virginia?
Oh,
like,
my gosh,
better
yeah.
than Erie?
Yeah.
Like, because we have all that light.
It's light pollution and clouds. Pollution, yeah. And so as long as you didn't have clouds, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I grew up close to a power plant, but we were west of the power plant, so we were upwind, downwind. We were not in the wind of the power plant, so we didn't get a lot of the clouds. But no, absolutely gorgeous, and you know, it's just great to be able to stare up. And you know, I still have a backpacking telescope. You know, like I go camping, I'll take it with me. I love that stuff. So I think this is a really great opportunity to again recognize, like, in Erie, Pennsylvania, at one of our local universities, we have astronomers, and not just one university. Other universities have them too. We just happen to be bringing in Darren Williams, who's lectured before, is absolutely fantastic. So really excited for Erie for this moment, and why not have a talk around that?
Absolutely. Two very important conversations regarding African-American history and what's happening today. On Thursday the 22nd, Johnny Johnson, A History of U.S.'s Historically Black Colleges and Universities, and then Brother D, Daryl Craig, talking about the Blue Coats the next day for another nooner at the Jefferson Friday, February 28th at noon. Again, very appropriate and very important conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And Johnny Johnson's another scholar in residence at the JES, a longtime educator. And it's Black History Month, so we want to make sure that we're focusing on topics and helping educate our community around that. There are 107 historic Black colleges and universities throughout the country. How did they get started? What have their impact been? How have they changed over time? That's one of the things that we'll explore with him. And then thinking about a grassroots anti-violence movement in Blue Coats and what that does, you know, and the work that, you know, Brother D has had in the community and how that's grown over the years and how that really serves as a model, you know, and I think that it's important that we share that. And I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge we actually had that program either earlier this year or last year. Last year, it had to be last year, because we're just getting started this year. Mm-hmm. Last year, we had that at one of our satellite locations, and it did really well there. And that's the benefit of having these satellites. We have five of them now, and you know, so fortunate to have great community partners. Also great, you know, to have a community sponsor for that. Erie Insurance underwrites the cost of all of that, so our satellite programming is 100% free at all five of these locations. And whether you're going to Corry, you're going to Edinburgh, you're going to Fairview, you're going to Harbor Creek, or you're going to ECAT in the east side of the city. So we had that program there, and it was really successful, and people said, you should do this again, and we said, why not? So we wanted to make sure it's a part of our community conversation, and we talk about the successes that they've had, what anti-violence movement looks like. So really excited to have those two programs coming up later this month.
All righty, and then two more nooners that I think are appropriate, you know, back-to-back. So on Friday the 1st, you're having Drew Whiting from the EDDC come talk about sustained recovery. And then the next week, Tina Mangine from the Erie County Redevelopment Authority talking about redevelopment agencies and rebuilding the community. Again, That's all about the Renaissance there.
Right. I mean, it's the embracing of our words for a community, like Renaissance, rebuild, reimagine, you know, and that's an important thing that I think that we have to continue to remind ourselves of. One of the benefits we have with the Global Summit programming, Joel, is that, you know, we import the folks from out of town into our town so we can learn from them in our own backyard. When they show up, you know, folks will say, wow, I mean, something's happening here. This looks, you know, and we might see it every day. We might become a little tunnel vision to it. Right. So it's important to get those updates from folks of what is happening, what's the future look like, you know, what has happened over the course of just a few years, if not just a few months. And so two opportunities to look at interesting development, one in the downtown, two, you know, what's happening with the Redevelopment Authority as a whole, particularly around the developments happening on 12th Street. You know, that is really exciting.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Again, another Nooner, Infinite Erie and Kim Thomas. You know, we found out about Infinite Erie at the Jefferson. That was the presentation there.
Right, and a terrific partnership with several organizations, you know, throughout the community, including the Community Foundation, Erie Insurance, the Gaming Revenue Authority, and others that I may be missing, and I'm remiss to acknowledge, and I apologize, but really looking at a once in a century kind of moment, right? Because Joel, you know this as well as I do. We've picked up on the phrase of the cavalry's not coming to save you. Federal government's not going to bail you out. You're on your own. Well, that's been true for like 100 years, and then a once in a century pandemic happens, and suddenly the federal government is releasing funds to make sure that progress that was made over decades wasn't wiped out overnight. And so, you know, with funding coming from ARPA and the Inflation Reduction Act and others, it behooves regions to be planning for what to do with that. And so Erie embraced that opportunity by putting together a playbook, working with the new localism advisors, Bruce Katz, amongst others, helped to shape and inform that so that we've got $1.something billion worth of shovel-ready projects that are being worked on through now the action arm of that Infinite Erie. So now we want to find out, you know, what has been happening, what are some updates, what do we have to look forward to, where are we headed with that playbook, you know, are we calling plays out of it? Yes, we are, but we'll hear from Kim herself, the person in charge of leading that. So a great opportunity to again take a look at how Erie is really serving as a model for other metros. This goes right back to what I was saying about Germany, about being good at planning, right? You know, like their federal government's deploying funds to help regions recover. That's not something the U.S. is used to. U.S. could look to the German model of how the federal government deploys funds, how regions are taking advantage of that, and how that, you know, matriculates down to the local level. Here with Infinite Erie, we're ready. Erie's not saying, well, as soon as we get the money, then we'll figure out what we want to do. No, we have plans identified. We have things we can be working on. So really looking forward to that update from Kim.
We're talking to Ben Spagan. He's the vice president of the Jefferson Educational Society right here on State Street for their winter program. Can I just give an observation? You tell me if I'm bunk or not, okay?
All right, I'm ready.
I feel like this lineup of programming is very responsive to current events and current developments in Erie. And it doesn't have that flavor of, hey, we're wearing berets and we're pontificating, you know, what the Odyssey. I mean, you know, there have been seasons at the Jefferson where we're dealing with the classics or dealing with kind of new ideas. This is pretty, you know, pragmatic. Is that an unfair?
I will always take a compliment in being called pragmatic. So I appreciate that. I have never been known to wear a beret. I bought one when I visited France once, but nice. I put it on. I'm not a beret guy. You know? I'm a baseball hat guy.
I always talk about the berets and the patches on the elbows.
Oh, I do love a good elbow patch, though, but those are like my college professor days. Yes. Plus, also, I wear things and I wear them out.
Right.
But to the point, Joel, I think when I look at the programming and I look at what we do as a community-based think tank, is we need to be a think tank for everybody, and we shouldn't ever be communicating out to the public that somehow we are part of an ivory tower, or that, you know, we are elitist, or that our doors are not open to you. Our doors are open to everybody. You know, we're here to drive community progress, period. You know, we're here to help our community. Now, we're doing important work here in Erie, we also like to think that by the important work that's being done in Erie, what we can showcase is a platform for civic dialogue that can serve as a model to other places, not just throughout the country, but throughout the world. You know, there are other places similar to Erie that are asking questions that we might be asking here, that they don't have a resource like a nonpartisan community-based think tank. And we can maybe show the way of here's how to have those conversations productively. You know, we can agree to disagree without being disagreeable. Right. We can shine light on contentious issues without drawing heat. And so I want to get people in conversation. I want people to remember that this isn't a game of golf, right? And I like golf just as much as the next person, but golf is an individual sport in which you hit a ball and you go forward, and it's not a back and forth. I like to think of what we do as tennis. You know, like we're in a volley with the community, back and forth. We want to hear as much as we want to listen, and we think that we have a lot to say because we are blessed to have a great, deep, rich network of experts that can speak to topics and help people learn along the way. That really, at the end of the day, when somebody comes into any one of our programs, my goal is that you walk out of the room saying, I knew more than I did when I walked in as I walked out, you know, or yeah. I think differently about that. I'm willing to entertain a position that maybe I might not have agreed with. I still might not agree with it, but I'm willing to entertain it.
Yeah. I think another layer to this, though, is that maybe if we were to do a snapshot of the Jefferson 8 to 10 years ago, there just wasn't that much going on here. And right now, the urgency of the Renaissance, of the new Erie is kind of pushing you guys and saying, hey, we got to author and facilitate these conversations because, you know, there's an urgency here.
I think you're so right, Joel, and I think it's important to remind people we're only 15 years old. So, you know, the think tank just turned 15 last year. We'll turn 16 this year, so yeah. We can legally drive. So, you know, a lot has happened in a recent amount of time, and I was just in conversation yesterday with Tom Murphy, who's a former mayor of Pittsburgh, and was with the Urban Land Institute for a while, and is a consultant to metros. And one of the things that he had relayed that I hope I'm doing justice here on the radio is that sometimes when you get so caught up in just today, like just dealing with the issues of today, really you are in essence managing a decline. If you don't have time to think about tomorrow, we think our role is we have the time to be trying to help the community think about tomorrow so that Erie's not just thinking about, okay, let's get the potholes paved, but yeah. Let's think about how we reimagine a downtown, mm-hmm. how we might imagine something brighter and more vibrant than we see today, which what we see today is more brighter and vibrant than what we saw 10 years ago. And sometimes you just have to create that, right? You know, like I love the story of on the same block that you share, you know, Ember and Forge. You know, Hannah Kirby wanted a coffee shop she could go to. And so what did she do? She created it. And then during the pandemic, I know that it was challenging for so many businesses and so many unfortunately had to shut their doors, but Ember and Forge made it. On the other end of that block, a Starbucks, a corporate coffee shop didn't make it. You know, and that shows you community buy-in, and it shows you people that are willing to take risks, willing to try to make their place better, you know, because they care about it, they want to be attentive to it. So yeah, I think in many ways we feel that urgency that Erie feels, that if we don't seize this moment today, Joel, I don't want to be here 10 years from now having the same conversation with you of like, man, buddy, we're really going to do it. We've got this new plan that's different than the old right. plan because we didn't do anything with the old plan before.
And that's honestly, and you know this from your work at the Reader and your work at the Jefferson, you know that there is a layer, I shouldn't say a layer, there is a cohort of people that listen to this show, that are in our community, that have heard this all before, and there is a lack of trust in civic leaders that we're going to move the needle this time, that we're going to break out of our 60 years of decline. I'm 62 years old. The decline started when I was born. Yeah, I love when Dan Laughlin says the same thing. It's like, geez, when I came on the planet is when things started going south in Erie, you know? And so there needs to be some trust. And I think when you build a building like across the street, it's like, oh yeah, we're no longer Skid Row here on Lower State Street, right?
I mean, and you can go back to the JES worked with several others, and ULI came up and actually did an advisory panel study. And one of the things that came out of that study was boy, wouldn't it be great if, you know, some of your buildings that are not drawing people downtown or being used adequately may have a different purpose, and you were to build an attraction on top of them. And now, you know, look at what has happened to that space in terms of you have an Olympic grade gym there now. Mm-hmm. We couldn't have imagined that several years ago. I think to your listeners who are, you know, perhaps the doubting Thomases in the conversation, I'd first want to ask them, you know, what could we do to change your opinion? You know, what sort of evidence are you looking for, you know, from a community? I'd also ask them, what'd you do last time? The last time you felt this momentum, the last time you heard things are changing, where were you in the conversations? Where were you in the rooms? Where were you in your own community? Were you picking up trash on your street because you were tired of seeing litter on the side of your road? That's a small thing that you can do that can really have a big impact. So I'd encourage people to say, take this opportunity to ask, how can I be a part of it rather than being apart from it? Mm-hmm. To actually be a part of what's happening rather than to be apart from it.
Well, I think about, you know, what the neighborhoods are doing. So our West Bayfront are getting a strategic plan together around Gridley Park. And, you know, you drive past that park, you're like, boy, there's so much potential here. You know, I mean, and they're doing it. You're looking at what the folks at Eastside Renaissance are doing. We're getting that Erie Bank branch. There's
huge,
so much going on.
Huge. You know? And an important thing, too, is the look. Metros have no doubt indelibly been impacted by the pandemic. Every town and city has been impacted by it. You'd be hard pressed to find places that in some way were not impacted by it. And so we wonder, like, well, are we going back? I hate the B word here. I want to move forward. There is no back. Move forward. Things are different. We have changed. One of the changes that has happened just recently is a new study has revealed that there of 26 metros that they looked at, they're at 110% regrowth capacity. People are back in the downtowns. What was interesting also about that study was, what are they doing there? Are they living there? Are they working there? No. 2/3 of the volume of these downtowns are visitors. They're coming for attractions. You have to have something that draws somebody in and then keeps them there for a bit.
Yeah.
They don't have to live there. But if you have nothing for people to go do and see, they're not going to just show up. There has to be a something. And that's been a seismic change, thinking about any sort of development, whether it's a small town of 100 people or it's a small city of 100,000, or if it's a mega region, really rethinking what that looks like. So now is the opportunity to capitalize on that and say, build the next chapter of Erie. And people are hard at work on doing that. We want to highlight that. We want to make sure that people that are doing that are being checked, that we're looking at best practices, that we're not making gut decisions, that not just a few are making decisions for all. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of place that conversation can happen at the Jefferson Educational Society.
How do people find out more about the different events and things?
Sure. I'd welcome people, one, to, you know, to head to our website, jeserie.org. They can also give us a call, 814-459-8000. They can also just stop by our headquarters. We're on 32nd and State Street. They can also visit us at the satellite locations for those programs. And you can find and connect with us on a whole range of the social media stuff, from formerly Twitter to X to Facebook to Instagram to LinkedIn. We are all over, but we welcome you to be a part of the conversation, because if this isn't an Erie for all of us, it's for none of us.
And how do you say goodbye in German here, bro?
Schuss. You say Schuss.
And it, Schuss.
As soon as you asked, I was like, of course I'm going to forget the German. But Schuss. No, I downloaded Duolingo. I'm still doing it today. I'm trying not to be a bad American. I'm trying to know a couple of languages. So Joel to you, I say Schuss.
And Schuss to you, or ciao, as we would say in Italy, right? Ben Spagan, the vice president of the Jefferson Educational Society. Thank you so, so much.
Yeah, thanks, Joel.
You've been listening to The Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast from TalkErie.com. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher and get involved by emailing joel@talkerie.com.